for coming on this windy, cold, rainy. So on these kind of days, it is good to hear something that warms our heart and maybe even makes us think how wonderful. So we're going to continue reading from the 10th canto. Who remembers what we were reading from last week?
Maharaj Muni asked to grant him the benediction of remembering Krishna.
Where? Where did Narada Muni meet Krishna?
In Dwarka.
So Narada Muni went to Dwarka. Why? Because he had heard that Krishna had done something quite wonderful. And what was that wonderful thing? He had married simultaneously in different places 16,108 different queens in different places at the same time. And Krishna was there with each queen doing different things. So he wanted to see for himself the amazing qualities of the land of Dwarka. So he went, and there was a beautiful description of the place of Dwarka, which Krishna had personally designed. And it was made according to his desires. So when the unlimited Supreme Lord desires something, who would not want to see it? The manifestation of that desire. So Narada Muni went into the first palace, and there he saw Rukmini with Krishna. He saw Krishna with Rukmini. And Krishna greeted him, worshipped him, glorified him, being a Brahmin. What can I do for you? You've come here. How can I satisfy you? You've come all the way. And Narada Muni said, he asked for that benediction. What was the benediction he asked for? What did he want?
I always remember Krishna.
Yes. So then, wherever I travel, please grant me the power to remember you. Anugraha by your mercy, yatas smriti syat. Grant me the power to always remember you. How our lives would be different if Krishna granted us that power, blessed us with that power to always remember him. And not only always remember him, but never forget him either. Always remember him and never forget him. So Narada Muni left that palace and he walked into another palace, and there he saw Krishna. And Krishna greeted him, and he was doing something completely different than he was in the last palace, previous palace of Rukmini, and he was doing something completely different. In the second palace, it describes that he was offering oblations, doing a homa, a fire sacrifice, because the household is supposed to perform panchajagya to purify themselves of all the sins committed unwillingly during the day that everyone does, such as breathing and killing in that way, crushing, and when grinding spices, of course. Nowadays, most people don't use a mortar and pestle, but they just buy it. They buy their spices already ground and with no potency anymore. So they extract the potency from it by leaving it. It's old. And who knows, and they put other things in it. So in any case, and stepping and walking and eating and drinking and breathing, they cause harm. So in the second palace, Krishna was performing this panchajagya. In the third palace, he was doing something else. He was worshipping. He was they mentioned almost eight pal- one place he was playing dice with who? Uddhav. There's a particular game. I don't know which. Yeah, Akshay. Is anyone familiar with it? Akshay? It sounds like he was just playing dice. Akshay. Anyway, just playing dice. Does that mean that Krishna was breaking the principles? No, it doesn't, because whatever Krishna does is wonderful. That is the principle. That is the main principle that he... That whatever Krishna does is wonderful. So what is Narada Muni seeing here? He's seeing the activities that Krishna is performing, each one completely different from the previous activities. They seem to be quite average or normal, because he was performing the Panchajagya, like householders are supposed to do. He was with his friend and his wife, like many of us may do. He was practicing. Oh, I don't know that one. We'll just start reading today. In one place, he was petting his small children with great affection. In another palace, he was preparing to bathe, to take his bath. So, seemingly ordinary things, but when Krishna does them, they're obviously extraordinary. Why are they extraordinary? Because he's doing all the same person is doing all these different things in different palaces at the same time. So by definition, everything he's doing is extraordinary. And if he's so powerful that he can do this, expand himself in this way, and each expansion has all the potency of Krishna, the same potency as the Adi Krishna, the original Krishna. So why is he doing this? One naturally would ask that question. Why is this unlimitedly powerful person acting in seemingly simple, understandable, average ways, that imitating the ways of ordinary people? And the answer is because it's all exchanging rasas with his beloved devotees, because Krishna is Bhaktivatsaya. And in each place, Narada Muni walked in each palace. Narada Muni walked in and Krishna greeted him. Oh, Narada, so nice to see you. We have not seen you before. Thank you for coming. Is there anything we can do for you? Worshipping Narada, respecting him. So in each palace, Krishna acted in this way, and Narada Muni wasn't fooled into thinking that Krishna didn't see him in the previous one, or that this was a different Krishna, but he was simply astonished that Krishna was acting in the way that he wanted to act in. It was beyond his ability to understand. And this is the key factor in understanding Krishna's actions, is that we cannot understand them any more than a little newborn baby can understand the actions of his parents. Even more so, we can't understand why Krishna does what he does, other than in the most simple and basic way. What pushes Krishna to act as he does? It's all being controlled ultimately by the love of the devotees for Krishna. So what other wonderful things did Krishna or did Narada see? So Narada walked into a next palace, and time in each of the different palaces was serving Krishna, because although everything was being done by one Krishna in different ways in the different palaces, the times were also different. So in one place, Krishna was, this is text 25, he was observing the rituals for worship at sunset. He was doing his sandhya. And what was he doing? By refraining from speech, not speaking, and quietly chanting his Gayatri Mantra. And elsewhere, he was moving about with sword and shield in the arena set aside for sword practice. So what is wonderful about that? That Krishna was practicing. After all, he was a Kshatriya. What's wonderful about that? After all, practice makes perfect, they say.
Krishna doesn't have to practice anything to perfect it.
Yeah.
He's showing an example.
Huh?
He's showing an example.
Yes, he's showing an example. Of what?
That's very human like for somebody who's the Supreme Personality of God.
It is quite human like, isn't it? And especially since he's all powerful too, what does he need to use a sword? Balaram killed Ramaharsan Sutta with what? Some kush, some one little, even though kush is sharp. And Krishna, how did he kill the washerman? He just chopped his head off. And there Krishna is, practicing with his sword. He's already perfect. He's all powerful. He knows everything. So if you know everything, you also know how to fight with a sword, and you also know your opponent's weak points, and you could also easily, you have unlimited power to bewilder him. After all, he's bewildering everyone anyway. Sometimes when you get up fast, do you see little dots in front of your eyes? Low blood pressure. But so Krishna can make little dots appear before his eyes and then stick him with the sword. What does he need to practice his sword? He can make birds and elephants appear in the sky. He can do whatever he wants. Just think of the unlimited ways he could bewilder someone and distract someone. But he wants to practice with his sword. He's setting his example. He's ideal in every way, and he's acting in Nalalila. Because sometimes Krishna, and he's showing that whatever he is, whatever he does, at least he's not impersonal. What's the impersonal in Krishna doing these things? He was moving about with sword and shield in the arena set aside for sword practice. So usually you're also usually with someone. And that's another interesting thing, because if you've ever been to Jaipur, and have you seen the there's one king, the museum in Jaipur, in the palace, and the clothes of the king. Did you see that? Mm-hmm. How huge they were? They were like, it was about this wide. And he was 7 foot tall, and his clothes looked like he was 7 foot tall, and you wouldn't want to fight with him. And they describe how he would eat for breakfast, like it was like of halva or something like that, this huge amount of halva, like 20 kilos of halva, and then sleep all day now. No, and then he would go out first thing and practice sword. He would practice his fighting and things like that. That's what he would do. So it says that he was doing, no. I can't actually remember how much, but it was more than you would expect. Another palace, Lord Gadagraj. What does Gadagraja mean? Gadagraja, what does that mean?
Lord, the brother of Gada.
And who is Gada?
One of Krishna's cousin brothers.
A cousin brother, what does that mean? So who was he?
The sons of the other queens of
Krishna. So in one place, Lord Gadagraja was riding on horses. elephants and chariots. So in the last thing we heard also, that he was doing his sandhya at sunset, and also in the next palace he was practicing sword fighting at what time of the day? Dawn, just right after the sun rises. So how is that possible? Well, it's not possible, but this was just one of the impossible things that Krishna was doing. He was also separate. He was also in each of the palaces at the same time. That's not possible either. And in another place, he was resting on his bed. No, it was at noontime. No, excuse me. Riding on horses and elephants is a noon activity. So if you ever wonder what you're supposed to be doing at noon, you should ride your elephant. You can ride your elephant to work in the morning, and then at noontime you can, during lunch break, you can. And in another place, he was resting on his bed while poets recited his glories. So all these things were going on at the same time. All time and place was serving Krishna's pleasure. Somewhere he was consulting with royal ministers like Uddhav. Uddhav was considered very wise. And who was Uddhav's teacher in his wisdom? Brihaspati. And somewhere else he was enjoying in the water, surrounded by many society girls and young women. According to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Krishna met with his counselors around dusk and enjoyed water sports in the afternoon. Somewhere, 28, he was giving well-decorated cows to exalted brahmanas. And elsewhere, he was listening to the auspicious narrations of epic histories and Puranas. So the itihas he was listening to. There are two main itihas, and they are the Ramayana and Mahabharata. So I don't know if he was listening to the Mahabharata because he was doing it still. But all the histories and the Puranas, itihas puranani shranvatam mangalani cha, all these very auspicious things, instead of, because one of the attributes of all this itihas, of course, is that it's very auspicious, it's purifying, there are moral lessons. The heroes are good, the bad people are bad, and the bad people lose, and good triumphs over evil, and it is full of hope. And instead of listening to these things, because this is, let's see, giving cows in charity occurs, what time of the day? Morning. Who said that? How do you know that? Oh, that's nice. We also read it, but we didn't remember. That's really good. So next time you want to give your cows in charity, you should know that if you follow Krishna's example, you should do that in the morning. And hearing the histories, the itihas puranani, takes place in the no, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in the afternoon. Somewhere, Lord Krishna was found enjoying the company of a particular wife by exchanging joking words with her. Somewhere else, he was found engaged along with his wife in religious ritualistic functions. Somewhere, Krishna was found engaged in matters of economic development. And elsewhere, he was found enjoying family life according to the regulative principles of the Shastra. So everything was very regulated and scheduled different things at different times according to Shastra. So according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, joking conversations with one's wife takes place when? At night. Whereas religious rituals, economic development, and family enjoyment occur during both the day and the night. Somewhere he was sitting alone, meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dhyayantam ekam asinam. He was sitting. He was sitting on his asan, and he was meditating on Purusham Prakriti Param. He wasn't meditating on the impersonal Brahman, but the Purusha Prakriti Param. What does that mean? Yeah, so basically the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purusham and Prakriti Param. Of the Supreme Lord who is in charge of the Supreme Prakriti, the Supreme Nature, who is transcendental, he is Param, he is beyond the material nature. So what is, of course, interesting about that? Yeah, he was the Supreme Person. So what part of himself was he meditating on?
Personhood.
Huh?
Personhood.
Yes, it doesn't say, but we don't know. He might have been meditating on Vrindavan. Maybe, maybe not. But maybe. And his activities there, because Rupa Goswami does describe that he did think about Vrindavan even when in Dwarka.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere he was rendering menial service to his elders, offering them desirable things and reverential worship. Srila Prabhupada comments, meditation as recommended in authorized scriptures is meant for concentrating one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Lord Krishna is himself the original Vishnu, but because he played the part of a human being, he taught us definitely by his personal behavior what is meant by meditation. So we should all give up our meditation on the impersonal Brahman. And we should meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who knows everything and he is always a
person.
This activity of meditation indicates when should meditation be done? What time, what part of the morning? Brahma Muhurta, the early morning hours before sunrise. Interesting how everything is organized. Why is it organized in this way? Why should you joke at a particular time and hear Shastra at a different time and meditate at a different time and practice your sword fighting at a different time and ride your elephants and horses at a different time? There's different potencies, and that is the purpose of this type of regulation, and for something like Vastu Shastra, because it tells you how to align the energies of the natural energy of the elements so that you can fulfill your purposes easily. So it's alignment with the natural energies of the Lord as he has set them up. In one place, he was planning battles in consultation with some of his advisors. So that's wonderful too. Wouldn't it be nice to have a meeting when you were discussing practical things like battle plans or whatever with Krishna himself? How nice it would be. No one would even want to avoid those meetings even. There wouldn't be drudgery, because if you got bored, you could just look at Krishna and he's all attractive. And in other places, he was making peace. In some places, he was preparing for war, and in other places, he was making peace. Somewhere, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were together, pondering the welfare of the pious. Narada saw Lord Krishna engaged in getting his sons and daughters married to suitable brides and bridegrooms at the appropriate time, and the marriage ceremonies were being performed with great pomp. Narada observed how Sri Krishna, the master of all yoga masters, arranged to send away his daughters and son-in-laws, and also to receive them home again at the time of great holiday celebrations. Well, there's that famous story in Braja when I think it's a Barsana story. Srimati Radharani comes home to Barsana and she goes back, you know that story? And she goes back, you know that one? When she goes and she goes, her father is so happy, and he gives her a whole trunk full of things to bring back to the house. And there's a special kind of sweet, I think, that you're supposed to, that when you return after this, there's a certain season, holiday season, where this is done. And then of course when she was going back, you know who she saw as she was on her way back? She had a big trunk. Yes, she saw Krishna. And Krishna said, "What do you have in the trunk?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "Oh, my parents gave me so many things. My father gave me so many things." And she took them out and she was doing different things with them. But also some sweets. And Krishna ate some sweets and she gave them to Krishna. And then when she went back, there were no sweets. So they asked when they got back to Jabat, "Where are the sweets?" And I can't remember what she said, but I'm sure it was very clever and very funny, and it got everyone very disturbed and said, "You've been with Krishna." "No, I haven't been with Krishna." So some pastime, but there's a famous pastime like this in Brazil. So the children would come home during the holidays and then he'd send them away again. And at the time of Krishna, at this time he had grandchildren even, but he was still ever fresh. You never see a picture, as Prabhupada said, of Krishna as an old man. All the citizens were astonished to see the holiday celebrations that Krishna performed. Somewhere he was worshipping all the demigods with elaborate sacrifices, and elsewhere he was fulfilling his religious obligations by doing public welfare work, such as construction of wells, public parks, and monasteries. What are the words here? Mat Adivi. He was constructing mats and Kurparam. Kurpa, wells, Arama, public parks and mats. And so he was doing just welfare work, pious work that increases your piety, and the king must do this to for the benefit of the citizens, and if he doesn't do it, he doesn't increase his piety. So what's another example of this? I can think of one other. But does anyone know any? Wells? Constructing mutts?
Parks.
Okay, what's another example of pious type of work?
Planting trees.
Planting trees, but what kind of trees specifically?
Fruits.
Fruit trees. Yes. Fruit trees. Huh? Yes. Wells.
And
huh?
Roads.
And roads. And public welfare work. Does the temple have fruit trees yet? Huh? What kind?
Mango.
Really?
Apple.
Yeah?
In the garden, yeah.
Yeah? Oh, nice.
What about planting roses? Is it pious?
Especially in Perth where they grow so well. How about, and notice it didn't say that Krishna was going out early in the morning to steal roses from other people. That was Krishna's devotees who were doing that for the sheer pleasure of wanting to offer everything to Krishna.
He's just thinking one thing. Wood truck flower has been stolen.
Where is this?
Sydney.
By who?
Gurmukha was just the story past time.
Ah. Those were the quote good old days.
But is it good to steal the flower from the neighbor and give it to Krishna?
No. But you can ask the neighbor's permission. Please, then it is good for them. The devotees, he said, no, I don't know. I don't want to talk about the quote good old days. In another place, Narada saw Lord Krishna engaged in getting his sons and daughters married to suitable brides and bridegrooms. Oh, we read that in the celebrations. In another place, he went on hunting expeditions, mounted on his Sindhi horse and accompanied by the most heroic of the Yadus. He was killing animals meant for sacrifice. Offering in sacrifice. So a Kshatriya has to do this. they quote from Prabhupada in the Krishna book here. According to Vedic regulations, the Kshatriyas were allowed to kill prescribed animals on certain occasions, either to maintain peace in the forest. So what kind of animals would they kill to maintain peace in the forest? Tigers. Wild, sometimes elephants would go wild. I think, were there lions? It says there were, but you never, was it lions?
Deers, lions.
Yeah, but were there lions? We never hear about, all the other animals actually, well, we see them, but in India, we don't see lions. Where have all the lions gone? But don't ask them where they've gone, because they are lying. They are lying. What? Never mind. Sorry. But why is it required that a Kshatriya kill animals? Why else? For sacrifice? And for...
So the people can go to Vana, to do Vana Prastha. They're not eaten up by tigers.
But they're not eaten up by deers. So why do they have to practice killing? But why do they have to practice? What's the meaning of that kind of practice? Of course, they're practicing their bowmanship. Why?
To get the right aim.
Yeah, but why else do they have to? Why else? There's another reason.
To maintain the peace in the forest.
Yes, but there's another reason why they have to practice.
To liberate those souls.
Spirit they need, and also you have to kill. Like, could you go to the forest and kill an ant and shoot? Could you kill a man? Or the you? Could you? It'll be very difficult.
He hasn't done it.
This is his little brother when he was 6 years old.
Okay.
He has to be able to kill.
Because it's just like when you're a doctor, you have to, first you practice on when you have to perform operations. I mean, it would be very, very difficult to have to cut someone open like that, because it's so much against nature, the nature. So you practice first on dead people, cadavers. So they go into the morgue and the doctors first practice on dead people. So similarly, the Kshatriyas, to be able to kill, which is required, it's required for them to kill. You have done something wrong, they have to kill, and you have to be callous to be able to do that. You have to have a bit of hardness in the heart and passion. So to practice getting that, they have to be able to kill.
I guess it's the same by doctors. They practice on the rats and so on like that, isn't it? Cutting rats.
They also practice on humans. That's why they call their The doctor's office is where I have my practice. Practicing on you.
Obviously.
Norm dispenses the known as the general practitioner.
They think I'm general practitioner here. Mr. Walker. Huh?
They're still practicing.
They're practicing on you. That's the dangerous part. And especially you go into one of it says child doctor, and then he's only 5 years old and he's practicing, so be careful. But here's, because they have to, they practice the killing art because they have to kill their enemies mercilessly to maintain peace in society. They can't be merciful to the enemies. They have to kill them. And, those who are causing trouble. And then this one is the one this one is such a wonderful one. Narada walked into one place, and in that place, avyakta lingam prakriteshu antapura grihadishu kvarchit charantam yogesham tadtad bhava babutsaya. Somewhere, Krishna, the Lord of mystic powers, was moving about in disguise. Amongst where? But not only the citizens, he was in disguise in the homes of his own ministers and other citizens in order to understand what each of them was thinking. So this is what the all-knowing Lord was doing. And when Narada Muni saw this, the display of the Lord's yoga maya, he laughed. And he addressed Lord Rishikesh. He went to the Lord and spoke to him, who was adopting the behavior of a human being. Purport. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Narada fully understood the Lord's omniscience. What does omniscient mean? He knows everything. He knows everything. He knows everything. Is that a reassuring thought or a frightening thought?
Confronting.
He knows everything. And thus when he saw the Lord trying to find out the mood of his ministers moving about in disguise, Narada could not help laughing. But remembering the Lord's supreme position, he somewhat constrained his laughter. But he thought, oh, this is amazing, how Krishna is moving around about in disguise so that they won't recognize him. And when Krishna wants to disguise himself, no one can recognize him. And when Krishna wants to reveal who he is to someone, no one can stop him revealing who he is. This is what Krishna, it's up to Krishna who he reveals himself to and who he disguises himself and doesn't allow someone to understand him. That's an interesting thought too. And no one can pierce or penetrate the disguise of Krishna and the coverings of Krishna. Anta bahir vastitam. You're inside and outside of everything, but you are covered, Kunti Devi says, by the curtain of your maya. So no one can see you. So Narada was aware of Krishna's supreme position. He laughed. And after that was, he laughed mildly, lightly. Why? Because he thought it wasn't so proper to laugh so loudly and blatantly in front of the Supreme Lord. So, but he had seen all these wonders of Krishna was doing, what Krishna was doing, imitating the activities and the behavior of human beings. Each different, each Krishna was acting differently, but it was only one Krishna, and each Krishna greeted him, and there was only one Krishna. Each Krishna greeted him as if they had never not seen him before. Now, what was Narada's desire? What did he ask Krishna for again when he first went to see him?
To grant me the benediction that I remember you.
Remember you. So, is it I'll read a little more. So Narada said to Krishna, after seeing all this display of mystic potency, he said, "Now we can understand your mystic potencies, which are difficult to comprehend, for even for great mystics. O Supreme Soul, Master of all mystic powers." Because Krishna is the master of all mystic powers, even the lesser mystics, and everyone is a lesser mystic compared to Krishna, because everyone has some mystic power or another. The little bugs can fly in the sky, they can burrow in the ground, they can eat wood, they can find wood, like the white ants, they call them. How do they find wood? The wood they want to eat, anywhere they can find it. Amazing mystic power. The vultures who are flying high in the sky, they have great eyesight, and they can see a dead body so far distant on the ground. So his Krishna's mystic powers are unlimited. So Narada got a glimpse of Krishna's unlimited potency, unlimited ability to do whatever he wants. And this is difficult to understand. Even if you're a mystic, one is a mystic oneself. Only by serving your feet have I been able to perceive your powers. Interesting point. Purport. According to the Acharyas, this verse indicates that even great mystics like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot fully comprehend the mystic power of the Supreme Lord. That's what Lord Brahma said that in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. He said, "I can't let others say they understand something about you, O Lord, but I won't say that." Because Lord Brahma had seen what? What did he see? What did he see? And? And? What he saw, expansions, but what expansions were they?
Covered by
Vishnu. Vishnu, Narayan forms, they were going inside of him, and they were being worshipped by all living entities in Brahma. He was staggered. He couldn't think properly, he was bewildered. So he's saying, "Only by serving your feet have I been able to perceive your powers. Oh Lord, please give me your leave." What does that mean? Now I've seen everything, now I wish to go. That's what Lord Brahma also said. "Now I've seen everything, it's time for me to leave. And I will wander about the worlds, which are flooded with your fame, loudly singing about your pastimes, which purify the universe." Purport. Even Narada Muni was bewildered to see Lord Krishna's amazing pastimes as a human being. Therefore, with the words, "Anujanihi mam deva," he requests permission to return to his normal service of traveling and preaching. Inspired by what he sees, he wants to preach widely the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So he wanted to remember Krishna, but when you remember Krishna, okay, everyone take a moment and remember Krishna right now. Okay. Now tell me what you're remembering, if you don't mind. If you want to, if you don't want to, you don't have to. But what did you remember about Krishna?
Face.
Okay. What did his face look like?
Beautiful.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? What was your Krishna doing?
I'm asleep.
Anyone else? No one wants to come back. Everyone wants just to think about Krishna. Yeah?
Just sort of Leela, what you just said. Just going on.
What did you think of? Anyone else want to say? But you can't, when you think about Krishna, because Narada, or remember Krishna, like we just remembered Krishna. We remembered Krishna. You can't remember nothing. You can't remember Krishna and remember nothing at the same time. When you're thinking about Krishna, remembering Krishna, you have to remember something about him. So now Narada, having seen this wonder of Krishna's pastimes, had so many things to remember. So this was Krishna's mercy. He had seen Krishna in so many different circumstances and pastimes and doing different wonderful things, including placing himself in a disguise and wandering around in an unrecognizable disguise and wandering around. So now he had so much content for his remembrance. And if we want to be Krishna conscious of Krishna, we need content about Krishna to fill our consciousness with. And therefore, Ihan Mali Seishi Nitya Sravanadi Da, that we need to hear about Krishna. To water the plant of our devotional service, if we don't hear about Krishna, we won't be able to remember him and think of him. So that's what Narada said. Now, I will leave now, because he was. I will wander about the worlds which are flooded with your fame, loudly singing about your pastimes which purify the universe. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, now Krishna is going to reply to Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. He's going to say something here. O Brahmana, I am the speaker of religion. I am its performer. I perform religious activities. I speak about religion and I perform the activities, and I am the sanctioner. I sanction religious activities. I observe religious principles to teach them to the world. To the world, my child, so do not be disturbed. Now, why did he call him my child? He calls him Putra, actually. Oh, my son.
Because he's the son of Lord Brahma.
Yeah. He's a mental son of Lord Brahma. So he's his grandson. Krishna's grandson.
Krishna Dattatri.
Huh?
Krishna Dattatri.
What does that mean?
Grandson.
Yes. Pitamaha, in the words of the Bhagavad Gita. Jiva Goswami explains that Lord Krishna wanted to dispel Narada's distress, which the sage felt because he saw Lord Krishna worshipping the demigods and even Narada himself. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura explains Lord Krishna's feelings as follows. As I state in the Bhagavad Gita, Yad Yad Acharati Sri Shash Tan Tan Eve Taro Janaha, whatever a great person does, ordinary people follow. Thus I bathed your feet today in order to help propagate the principles of religion. In the past, before I began my pastime of directly teaching religious principles, you came and offered prayers to me after I had killed which demon in Vrindavan? When did Narada come to Vrindavan to offer prayers to Krishna? After killing which demon?
Uma.
But in that same chapter.
Vyomasura.
But who else was killed in that chapter?
The morning he was killed, and in the afternoon Vyomasura.
But who was the he?
No. He put the hand in the mouth.
Left hand. Yeah, Keshi.
Yeah.
He killed Keshi.
Yeah.
He killed Keshi. So, and then he told, and he wanted to tell Krishna, now it's time. He had to tell him, now it's time for you to end your brother pastimes. So soon, tomorrow, I will see you doing this and this and this and this and this, and the next day, and you'll be doing this and this. You'll be killing Kamsa and all the wrestlers. So he's indirectly saying, it's time to go now. So in the past, before I began to propagate the principles of religion, meaning Bhagavad Gita, etc., you came and offered prayers to me after I had killed the Keshi demon. But I simply listened to your elaborate prayers and glorification and did nothing to honor you. Just remember this and consider. You came to me then, I didn't reciprocate with you. Did not say anything. Do not think you have committed an offense by allowing me to bathe your feet today and accept the water as holy remnants. Just as a son does not offend his father by touching him with his foot while sitting on his father's lap, so you should understand that in the same way, my son. You have not offended me. So what do you think about Krishna's way of dealing? It is too sweet. And then Sukadeva Goswami said, thus in every palace, Narada saw the Lord in his same personal form, executing the transcendental principles of religion that purify those engaged in household affairs. In this verse, Sukadeva Goswami repeats what the Lord himself explained. As Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was engaged in his so-called household affairs in order to teach people how one can sanctify one's household life although he may be attached to the imprisonment of material existence. Actually, one is obliged to continue the term of material existence because of household life. But the Lord, being very kind upon householders, demonstrates the path of sanctifying ordinary household life. Because Krishna is the center of all activities, the Krishna conscious householder life is transcendental to Vedic injunctions and is automatically sanctified. As stated in text 2 of this chapter, all the Lord's activities in the many palaces were performed by the Lord's single spiritual form, Ekena Vapusha, which manifested in many places at once. This vision was revealed to Narada because of his desire to see it and the Lord's desire to show it to him. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that the other residents of Dwarka could see Krishna only in the particular part of the city that they themselves occupied and not everywhere else, even if they would sometimes go to another precinct on some business. Thus the Lord gave a special view of his pastimes to his beloved devotee Narada Muni. 42. Having repeatedly seen the vast mystic display of Lord Krishna, whose power is unlimited, the sage was amazed and filled with wonder. Lord Krishna greatly honored Narada, faithfully presenting him with gifts related to economic prosperity, sense gratification, and religious duties. Thus fully satisfied, the sage departed, constantly remembering the Lord. Purport. As Srila Prabhupada points out in Krishna, the phrase "artha kama dameshu" indicates that Lord Krishna was behaving like an ordinary householder, deeply concerned with economic development, sense gratification, religious duties. Narada could understand the Lord's purpose, and he was most pleased by Sri Krishna's exemplary behavior. Thus, fully enlivened in his pure Krishna consciousness, he departed. In this way, Lord Narayan imitated the ways of ordinary humans, manifesting his divine potencies for the benefit of all beings. Thus he enjoyed dear king in the company of his 16,000 exalted consorts who served the Lord with their shy, affectionate glances and laughter. Lord Hari is the ultimate cause of the universal creation. This is the final verse in this chapter. He's the ultimate cause of the universal creation, maintenance, and destruction. My dear King, anyone who chants about, hears about, or simply appreciates the extraordinary activities he performed in this world, which are impossible to imitate, will surely develop devotion for the Supreme Lord, the bestower of liberation. Now that's good news, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has given various meanings for the word Ananya Vishayani. This term may indicate that the Lord performed activities in Dwarka that were unusual even for his planetary expansions, to say nothing of others. Or the term may be understood to indicate that the Lord performed these activities for the sake of his pure, exclusive devotees. In any case, one who recites or hears accounts of these pastimes will certainly be engaged in Krishna consciousness and, as Srila Prabhupada writes, quote, certainly find it very easy to traverse the path of liberation and taste the nectar of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada further points out that the words anumodate here indicate that one who supports a preacher of the Krishna consciousness movement will also receive the benefits mentioned here. Thus, in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, what chapter? 69th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Narada Muni Visits Lord Krishna's Palace in Dwarka. And as you well know, the next chapter is 70. And 70, chapter 70, does anyone know what that is about?
Krishna's daily activities.
And something, but that, yeah. There are three things that occur in the next chapter. It is a continuation, in one sense, of hearing the wonderful activities of Krishna that he performed at each of his different palaces. And then in the midst of that, something extraordinary happens. Does anyone know what that extraordinary thing is? A messenger comes. And then after that, to complete the information, Narada Muni makes a return visit. So we shall start hearing that tomorrow. Krishna wills. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments?
So we learned that Krishna was doing different activities at selected times, so to increase the potency of these activities.
To what?
To increase the potency of these activities.
To increase the potency of his activities?
No, of his activities. Like, you performed certain activities in Dikital and Mahotu in order to increase.
Oh, but that's not why Krishna was doing it.
Yeah, but one of the reasons given why it's done in this particular time frame,
yes,
is to increase the potency.
Yeah.
So, how does this, does this apply to us at all? I mean, yes.
You mean as far as chanting Hare Krishna?
Well, as far as
on two levels, well, first we'll just say about chanting Hare Krishna. In one sense, no, in one sense, yes. Because the chanting of Hare Krishna is always potent. But yet we're recommended to chant, especially when? And also in the evenings too, kirtan, so that our mind becomes filled with that after a day of work or service or whatever. But so that's specifically about chanting Hare Krishna. But you mean when should we hunt?
I mean, this is the activities of a kshatriya, but in terms of the devotees, do we have like set times to do certain things?
Like?
Chanting is one thing to do. We hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning and all these things. So spiritual practice in internal cultivation is recommended for the morning, but during the day,
Here we are living in Kali Yuga and we don't have so much facility to alter our activities, but different things work better at different times. Even our eating and digestion works better at different times, so things like that. But was there anything specifically were you thinking of?
I'm just thinking because it is mentioned that Krishna did it for the benefit of people. You know, so I'm just wondering, you know, how does this really apply to us?
Well,
if he does,
it's cultural. It's according to the culture, it was very supportive of developing Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada also explained for ordinary householders these things of how to make your life more auspicious is really essential, but he also explained that for devotees these things aren't as much required because everything one does as a devotee is auspicious. But yet we want to align our lives as much as possible with the natural laws, as much as practical, not as much as possible. And because in Kali Yuga we can't really do that very well, we're recommended to what?
To always remember Krishna.
And try and chant as much as possible. Okay. Okay, let's stop because it's a quarter after. So brave coming out in the cold and the rain and the wind just to hear about Krishna and his wonderful activities.